Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Tuesday, March 5th, 2024. I'm your reader, Grace Barter. The Waterloo Schools hosts an event to discuss active shooter scenarios. Students are wrapping up their first hour class on an unseasonably warm and sunny March morning, and the school parking lots are full. A popping sound echoes through the building, and a voice over the public address system says, "This is not a drill." What happens next? This is what members of more than a dozen emergency response agencies from across Black Hawk County talked about with educators Thursday during a joint tabletop exercise. The Waterloo Community School District hosted the event at the Waterloo Career Center, facilitated by Mindy Benson of Black Hawk County Emergency Management Services. Participants came from law enforcement agencies, fire departments, hospitals, and more. The exercise served as an opportunity to refine coordinated response strategies, enhance interagency communication, and foster a culture of preparedness to ensure a swift and effective response to any emergency situation. It also aimed to demonstrate the functionality and effectiveness of the school emergency radios recently installed in every Waterloo District building as part of the state's school safety initiative. What started as an active shooter scenario turned into a free-form discussion on the possibility of such a tragedy occurring in the Cedar Valley. Some participants said now is the time to get it figured out. The exercise follows the January 4th shooting at Perry High School that killed 11-year-old Amir Jolief, a sixth grader, and principal Dan Marburger. Six other people were injured in the shooting. The 17-year-old student who opened fire died of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot. Since then, a bill has advanced in the legislature to create a new permitting process for school districts to arm and train staff. House Republicans passed the legislation late Wednesday night after lengthy debate and vocal opposition by Democrats. Iowa code currently allows approved school staff to carry a gun on campus, but districts that implemented the practice faced problems with liability coverage from their insurance carriers. After the exercise in Waterloo, Benson said, "I went in with an open mind, and everything went beautifully. It's a great time when we get together and have everyone ask questions freely." While active shooter situations have sadly become commonplace in schools, Benson noted other entities in the community need to be on alert as well. "This does not happen just as schools. This affects everyone," she said. "It can be any time and everywhere. I do not want people to stop living their lives or being paranoid, but be cognizant of their surroundings." Benson suggested signing up for Alert Iowa text message notifications to prepare for situations like an active shooter by texting your county IA to 67283. Black Hawk County residents, for example, would text Black Hawk IA to the number. Or people can download the Smart 911 app on either Android or Apple devices. Alert Iowa is so very vital. It has everything from county notifications to notifications for your block, she explained. Other tips she offered include creating plans for the whole family in case of emergency situations, being mindful of the exits at larger events, saying something to organizers at an event when anything suspicious is seen. The public should be aware of what Black Hawk Emergency Management Services do, she added, saying that the Waterloo School's exercise can help improve the security of students and staff. Josh Johnson has been named incoming director of secondary education for the Waterloo Community School District. The appointment is effective July 1st, pending approval by the Board of Education. Superintendent Jared Smith said in a news release, Josh is the ideal candidate to fill this position. We believe he has the perfect combination of experiences and skill sets to lead our secondary schools in the years to come. Johnson is excited about the opportunity. As a former high school principal and AEA administrator serving the Cedar Valley for the past 12 years, it has become evident that Waterloo has a thriving district and community, Johnson said. I am looking forward to the opportunity to grow leaders within the schools while working with administrators to contribute to the progressive vision of the district. He will succeed Amy Schmidt in the position. Schmidt is moving into a new role for the district as Executive Director of Teaching and Learning. Johnson began his education career in 2006 in the Starmont Community School District in Arlington, where he taught grades 6 through 12 and served as the K through 12 Activities Director. In 2011, he became Assistant Principal and Activities Director at Union High School. He served as principal at Wapsie Valley Junior High and High School in Fairbank, and later at Charles City High School. In 2018, Johnson served as Region 8 Administrator at Central Rivers Area Education Agency in Cedar Falls. He has a Bachelor of Arts in Secondary Education degree and a coaching endorsement from Wartburg College in Waverly. He earned his Master's of Arts in Education and PK through 12 Principal Endorsement and PK 12 Special Education Supervisor credentials from UNI in Cedar Falls. He is currently enrolled in UNI's Superintendent Program. Another former City Council member is running for Iowa's Senate District 38. Steve Schmidt, who served on the Waterloo City Council from 2008 until being ousted in 2019, announced Monday he's making the Republican primary a three-person race. The election is June 4th. The longtime Waterloo businessman, currently Director of Telecommunications Sales at the Gordon Flesh Company, thinks his long list of community and political involvement sets him up to be a contributor in Des Moines. I think what's going on down at the State House right now demonstrates how Iowa is one of real examples of how things can work well, especially compared to some of the other states around us, like Illinois, he said during a brief interview before heading off to his next endeavor. I think I can add to that, bring my experience to that, and help us continue in a very positive fashion. Iowa and South Dakota are states everybody else wants to be like. Schmidt will challenge Dave Sayers, a businessman and former one-term Cedar Falls council member, and political novice James McCullough, an electrical engineer and entrepreneur. A competitive race, he acknowledged, is ultimately good for the party. All three will be hoping voters give them a shot in November to flip the seat, previously District 30 before redistricting, that's been held by Democrat Eric Giddens since 2019. Giddens is running for re-election. The district contains parts of Black Hawk, Tama, and Benton counties, including Cedar Falls, spanning from Hudson and Evansdale to Gilbertville and LaPorte City and south to Traer, Dysart, and Mount Auburn. An Oline native, Schmidt, 74, has respect for the several Democrats representing the Cedar Valley at the state level, but thinks more Republicans need to be present, offering their side of the issues, especially with Republicans being the controlling party right now. The 1973 University of Northern Iowa graduate is no stranger to political campaigns, having run ones as well for Waterloo Mayor and Black Hawk County Supervisor. Additionally, he was the Black Hawk County Republican co-chair from 2002 until 2008. However, this is his first run for a state office. Schmidt will focus on tax relief and won't be pushing to spend reserves despite some pressure to do so, but admittedly will also spend money where money needs to be spent. My campaign will primarily be about the budget. I think the governor and the state house have been doing a marvelous job, he said. We have all kinds of excess funds. I know there are some people who point out we have all this money and need to spend it. But if you look at my city council record, I've always been of the frame of my mind that I'm elected to represent the taxpayer. Safe communities, career opportunities, and you and I are top of mind as well. But Schmidt says he's still very much in learning mode when it comes to newer issues like those in education involving area education agencies and the idea of arming school staff for the sake of security. At the end of the day, he feels his candidacy boils down to his experience, headlined by his time on council and in business and understanding the impacts locally. Some of the folks down in Des Moines, they've never been on that side of the table, says Schmidt. If you look at my history, early on in my career, I was a union representative on the railroad, and I've always been a business owner or been on the management side for those conversations, and then at city council for 12 years. This is a culmination of all the things I've been doing the last 15 to 20 years, he added. His volunteer experiences are extensive, from time with the Waterloo Rotary Club and the Salvation Army to the Grow Cedar Valley Ambassadors, Black Hawk County Farm Bureau, and Sullivan Brothers Iowa Veterans Museum, to name a few. Authorities have released the identity of the person who died in a two-vehicle crash in rural Benton County on Friday. According to the Iowa State Patrol, 21-year-old Megan Devane of Independence died at the scene of the accident. The crash happened at about 3:45 p.m. in the 5100 block of Iowa Highway 150 near Urbana when Devane's northbound Jeep Patriot crossed the center line and collided with a southbound GMC Sierra, according to the Iowa State Patrol. The GMC's driver, Jeffrey Burroughs, 50, of North Liberty, was flown to University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City by helicopter. The accident remains under investigation. A Waterloo man has been arrested on driving charges after he allegedly drove through the entrance of a Waterloo grocery store Sunday night. Michael Lee Branch, 48, told police he remembered driving and having a panic attack, but he said he didn't remember crashing into glass doors at Ray's Market, 1975 Franklin Street, around 11:10 p.m., according to the court records. Fire damaged a garage behind a Waterloo home on Sunday night. Details weren't available, but neighbors called 911 after noticing flames coming from the two-stall garage off in the alley in the 1400 block of Franklin Street. No injuries were reported, and the cause of the fire hasn't been determined. A Cedar Falls shop building was destroyed by fire. Fire destroyed a large shop building at a home in rural Cedar Falls late Sunday. No injuries were reported when the flames engulfed the metal building at 1601 South Union Road around 8 p.m. Fireballs and small explosions were seen coming from the structure as crews with the Cedar Falls Fire Rescue and Dyke Fire battled the inferno. The blaze also claimed a camper parked nearby. Firefighters set up a water shuttle to move water to the site. Crews worked to extinguish the blaze and prevent it from spreading to the adjacent field. Officials said no injuries were reported. The cause of the fire hasn't been determined. Cedar Falls Fire Rescue was assisted by Cedar Falls Utilities, Mercy One Paramedics, Black Hawk County Dispatch, Black Hawk County Sheriff's Office, and the Dyke Fire Department. Authorities are urging residents to exercise caution as a massive field fire swept through rural Waterloo on Sunday afternoon. the blaze started with what was reported as a fire in a barn filled with hay on Big Rock Road on the outskirts of town, said Battalion Chief Ben Peterson with Waterloo Fire Rescue. Heavy winds drove the flames across a tilled field, prompting officials to evacuate homes and shut down a part of the roadway in the area of Dunkerton Road. It was crazy. That blew up on us so fast it just went black all of a sudden. I was telling them to retreat, but they couldn't. That was close, Peterson said. The fire also drew crews from fire departments in Cedar Falls, Dunkerton, Denver, Evansdale, Reedland, and Janesville. Firefighters were able to get a handle on the flames, and no other structures were damaged. These guys did great. These communities did really good, Peterson said. I thought I was going to lose that, and I was worried about what was on the other side of that hill, he said, pointing to nearby farmsteads. Five or six nearby farmers headed out in tractors and cultivators to plow fire breaks. You can see where they put fire breaks on that flank, and then ahead of it, Peterson said. Fire officials estimated was about 100 acres in size. Tinderbox conditions, accompanied by warm weather and swift winds, have prompted many communities to institute bans on open burnings. Bans are in place in Butler and Tama counties, according to the Iowa Department of Public Safety. Buchanan County has a red flag warning that recommends against burning. For most people, inspiration can strike at any moment. For Waterloo West High School senior Allie Parkhurst, inspiration came to her 2 years ago, and that inspiration has changed her life. Parkhurst was recently named Iowa High School Press Association 2024 Iowa Journalist of the Year after reviving the student newspaper at West High. Parkhurst noticed something was missing at the school. Students did not have a way to report on school events or express themselves, so she and Mariah Slater, then sophomores, decided to resurrect something West High had not had since 2015, a newspaper. That's when West High School's previous paper, The Spectator, stopped publishing. I noticed we did not have a newspaper anymore, and we talked about it. I love writing and photography, so to be able to do it for school was really nice, Parkhurst said. Once we got into it, we knew there was no backing out. We really put our heart and souls into it. Slowly, things started to fall into place. She transitioned into the role of editor this year and really hit her stride. I have learned a lot about being a leader and stepping up, even when I was scared to do so, Parkhurst said. I went from a staff member on yearbook and newspaper to the editor-in-chief. Other students in our program looked to me with questions that 2 years ago I would not have been able to answer. Now I am the person who gets to lead, and that has been a big change. As the newly revamped Wahawk Insider has become a hit with the West High community, people outside the high school have taken notice as well. In October, Wahawk Insider was honored as the News Team of the Year by the Iowa High School Press Association. Parkhurst plans to continue to pursue journalism and sports photography in the future. She's excited about the legacy she and her classmates have left and thinks the Insider is in good hands with the underclassmen. Her favorite part about the job is talking with the people she interviews. Children and adults stepped and twirled to Balkan folk music as hundreds celebrated their Bosnian roots Saturday at the Waterloo Convention Center. The Kud Kulo Heritage Group marked its 21st year and Bosnia Herzegovina Independence Day, as well as the upcoming International Women's Day, with the help of the Iowa Bosnian Cultural Foundation during an evening of traditional dance and singing. Preserving your own heritage and loving it It makes us more proud of the country that you actually live in. We appreciate more of what we have, said organizer and dance instructor Zulfeta Rizvik. Rizvik said the group had originally planned to hold a regular concert in a local school, as it had in past years. As interest grew, the event was moved to an upper room at the convention center, and then, as tickets sold out, to the convention center's main floor. It was a pleasant surprise. It shows how much we are appreciated because there are so many kids and parents and community members who are involved in our group, Rizvik said. In the end, the event's slogan became, Cherish Tradition, Celebrate Women, Unite Generations. Refugees from the former Yugoslavia began arriving in the Waterloo area in the 1990s, fleeing from war that followed the nation's breakup. KOLO, the Bosnian language acronym for Cultural Artistic Assembly of Dance, was formed in 2003 to keep the Bosnian diaspora in the Cedar Valley connected with its cultural heritage. Here we are, still thinking about Bosnia as our homeland, as well as the United States, said Rizvik, who lived the first 30 years of her life in Yugoslavia and is now approaching her second 3 decades in America. It is possible to have to be two big loves, two countries, and love them with my whole heart. On Saturday, more than 20 years later, children who were born in the U.S., some of whom have never been to Bosnia, continued to carry on the cultural legacy by performing the traditional dances. The Eastern Iowa Sports Show is returning to the Unidome in Cedar Falls from Friday to Sunday. A highlight of this year's show will be the interactive Sea Lion Splash Show, which is making its Midwest debut. Other show attractions include the Kids Zone, which offers a variety of activities including inflatables and archery. Wristbands are $10. Fishing enthusiasts can visit the Trout Pond for $5, which is suitable for all ages, or the casting tank stocked with fish. Professional anglers will conduct live seminars every 20 minutes. A schedule is available on the event's website, EasternIowaSportsShow.com. The show boasts the area's largest indoor display of boats, RVs, campers, poly outdoor furniture, swing sets, golf carts, and all-terrain vehicles. On Saturday, the first 50 kids in attendance will receive a free fishing pole, and on Sunday, the first 50 kids will receive a free tackle box. There will also be an opportunity to win a Yeti door prize. Show hours are 3 to 8 p.m. Friday, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Saturday, and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday. Discounted advance tickets are available for $7 on the website, or tickets can be purchased at the door for $10. Children 12 and younger are free. And at the sports show, at first glance, the site of the best detour camper repair seems an idyllic, laid-back setting. Roosters are crowing and Big Bob, a friendly cat, saunters by. In sharp contrast, the inside of a large outbuilding is a hub of activity. Ruby, a 1970 Airstream land yacht, is the center of attention. Owners Stacy and Justin Douglas and their team have been working tirelessly to complete a full renovation of the trailer in time for this weekend's Eastern Iowa Sports Show. It will be the pair's second appearance at the event. Last year, they restored a vintage 1959 Shasta that sold on the first night of the show. It normally takes us 6 months to a year to complete a trailer, Justin said. We started this one the first part of January. We've been working nonstop every single day, 12 to 16 hours. We'll put in at least 1,000 hours on this one. The Airstream, purchased from a local resident, is undergoing a complete overhaul. The entire outer shell was suspended while the frame was painted and insulated, and a new subfloor was installed. It has been completely rewired and features new flooring, birch cabinetry, and custom-built furniture. A new air conditioning unit was installed, as well an on-demand water heater, vents, a backup camera, appliances, and even a fireplace. It will house a double bed and a bathroom with a vanity, shower, and toilet. The Airstream will be available for sale at the sports show. And the Casey's purchases the Panther Travel Center. The convenience store Behemoth has acquired the 4-year-old Panther Travel Center near Hudson Road and West Ridgeway Avenue, where it plans to open its 7th store and gas station by April. The acquisition comes as construction on Casey's 6th store wraps up at the corner of 1st Street and Hudson Road. Casey's spokesperson, Katie Petru, confirmed the company's intentions for 1325 Ridgeway Avenue in an email after it applied for liquor and tobacco licenses through the city at that address, and the 4.37 acres was listed as pending sale. The travel center is located behind a Dairy Queen and near the Holiday Inn and Suites, Bienvenue Events Center, and U.S. Highway 20 Interchange. Its last day in operation is March 26th, which is when the sale is expected to close. The travel center opened in 2020, according to Courier Archives. A spokesperson for MT Tanks, LLC, owner of the property and travel center, declined to comment on the sale. Once open, the Casey's will serve its delicious handmade pizza as well as other food items from its kitchen, and it will carry convenience item products and have 8 fuel dispensers, wrote Petru. Other details weren't immediately available, including whether any locations were closing. Clerks at the 2 nearest stores off Viking and Green Hill Roads had not heard of any such plans. The building is listed at 14,560 square feet and hosts 3 commercial spaces. The travel center has 1, and the defunct Smoke and Oak wood-fired pizza restaurant has the other, facing Hudson Road. The third is occupied by the Shop Auto and Truck Repair, which opened recently in the back and will remain as a tenant. The property also includes a BP gas station immediately west of the building. Help Us Help Them event is planning to raise funds for medical care at the Cedar Bend Humane Society. Unable to afford medical care, an owner surrendered a 3-year-old shepherd to the Cedar Bend Humane Society. After surgery to amputate the injured limb, Luke has recovered and does just fine as a tripod. He's also found his forever home. An elderly, emaciated Boston Terrier was found abandoned with an injured eye that had to be surgically removed. An emaciated Aussie puppy covered in feces, urine burns, and parasites was dumped near a local highway. The nearly feral puppy required extensive medical treatment and fostering. As a nonprofit organization, Cedar Bend struggles daily with similar situations for the animals in its care, said CBHS Executive Director Christy Gardner. The shelter runs on donations and community support, and securing funds for surgeries and medical treatment is an ongoing issue. On Thursday, animal lovers can help us help them at the annual CBHS fundraiser at Bienvenue Events Center, 7400 Hudson Road in Cedar Falls. Doors open at 5 and a program is planned for 6:30. There will be hors d'oeuvres, a cash bar, and prize drawings. Those attending will be encouraged to make donations that will directly fund medical treatment of neglected, abused, and injured animals, said Gardner. People can help us provide care for these animals who are in desperate need. We have limited resources, but so far we've been able to do what we can with support from the community. We want to build up the fund so we can help animals who come to us in immediate need of medical care, she said. Donations also can be directed to the spay-neuter program or the Humane Society's behavior training program at Rock River Pet Resort in Waverly. Last year, 3,566 animals were brought into the shelter. Of those, 2,882 were strays, abandoned, or thrown away, said Gardner, and 684 were owner surrenders. Approximately 1,386 required major medical treatment or surgery. CBHS spent $250,000 in 2023 on medical care and surgeries, including vaccinations, antibiotics, parasite control, spaying and neutering, and medical supplies. We get animals that have been hit by cars, that have broken limbs and skin conditions, animals that have been starved and neglected, or have other medical and health issues. Sometimes people can't afford medical care for their pets because of economic situations and surrender the pet to us. Sometimes people choose not to take care of the animal and abandon it, Gardner explained. At the Help Us Help Them event, the evening's program also will focus attention on new activities and changes at Cedar Bend. Future proposed building projects will be highlighted. This is a great event for people interested in volunteering, too. They can learn more about what we do and meet board and staff members, Gardner said. Adoptable furry friends from the shelter, including dogs and training, will make a special appearance. Admission is free, but reservations are required by calling 319-232-6887 or emailing marketing@cedarbendhumane.org. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Tuesday, March 5th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Elvira Hutchison, 83, of Gilbert, Arizona, formerly of Waterloo, Iowa, died on Friday, March 1st, 2024, after a lengthy battle with dementia. She was born on September 27th, 1940, in Mannheim, Germany. Ellie married Mark Hutchison on May 10th, 1963, in Sandhofen, West Germany, as Mike was stationed there while serving in the Army. They moved to the United States in 1964 and settled in Waterloo. For many years, Ellie had an in-home daycare where she watched the neighbor kids. She then went to upholstery school to become an upholsterer. She had her own upholstery shop for 20 years. She even had a license to embroider Iowa Hawkeye merchandise. She closed the business after a shoulder injury. Ellie then worked for Covenant Hospital in Waterloo as a home health caregiver for the elderly. A private family burial will take place in June with a final resting place at Waterloo Memorial Park. Jacob Anthony Young, 21, of Dubuque, passed away on Friday, March 1st. Visitation will be from 1 to 6 p.m. Sunday, March 10th, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory. The funeral service for Jacob will be 10:30 a.m. Monday, March 11th, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery in Dubuque. Jacob was born June 19, 2002, in Davenport, Iowa, the son of David S. and Lisa Young. Jacob graduated from Hempstead High School in 2021. He was an apprentice with UA Local 125 Plumber and Pipe Fitters, but recently returned to work with Smith Dirt WRX. In lieu of flowers, a memorial has been established. Edward G. Schoolman, 97, of Holland, Iowa, passed away on Saturday, March 2nd, at Creekside Living in Grundy Center. Abel's Funeral and Cremation Service, Engelnickus Chapel, is caring for the family. William Bill Anderson, 73, of rural Traer, passed away on Thursday, February 29th, at Parkview Manor in Rhinebeck. Abel's Funeral and Cremation Service, French Hand Chapel in Rhinebeck, is caring for the family. Glenn Dawson, 87, of Jessup, died Sunday, March 3rd at his home. Services are pending at White Funeral Home in Jessup. And on to sports news. History has been made. It takes more than talent, commitment, and hard work to win one state championship. To win four in a row, you have to have a will to win. There has been no program in the state of Iowa over the last 4 years that has had more will to win than the Dyke New Hartford girls basketball team. Saturday, the Wolverines faced their toughest test of that will. But at the end of the night, Dyke New Hartford stood alone again as champions. Staving off a determined and spirited effort from Panorama, the Wolverines captured their fourth consecutive Class 2A state championship with a 48-46 victory over the Panthers at Wells Fargo Arena. The Wolverines join Ankeny from 2002 to 2005 as the only programs to win four straight five-player state titles in state history. Saturday was by far DNH's toughest to finish. In 2021, the Wolverines trailed Maquoketa Valley by 7 at half and needed to outscore the Wildcats in the fourth quarter to pull out a 47-42 win. A year later, they pulled away in the second half for a 59-52 win over Central Lyon, and then dominated Central Lyon 64-49 to make it three straight last March. Dyke New Hartford led for 27 minutes and 35 seconds in the game and trailed for exactly 22 seconds. But Panorama made sure the Wolverines never felt comfortable. The Panthers forced 24 turnovers, recording 21 steals. Dyke New Hartford led 22-20 at halftime, despite 14 turnovers. Peyton Peterson scored the first 4 points, and the Wolverines led by as much as 8, 19-11, after scoring the first 4 baskets of the second quarter. But Dyke New Hartford made just one shot in the final 5 minutes, a layup by Jaden Peterson. Panorama, meanwhile, scored 5 of the last 6 of the half, including a 3-pointer by Caitlin Kent with 1 minute 38 seconds remaining. The game was tied after one quarter, and it was tied 37-all after 3 quarters. The game could have went either way in the fourth. Peyton Peterson scored early to make it 39-37. Then it seemed like the Panorama, specifically star Jaden Sellers, seized the momentum. Sellers, who made 1 3-pointer all season, made one with 5 minutes and 11 seconds to go in the game to give the Panthers their first lead. Then, seconds later, Morgan Kreese scored on a steal and layup, and it was 42-39 Panorama. Sellers finished with 20 points, 9 boards, 9 steals, and 3 blocked shots in an all-time great individual state championship basketball performance. But as much will to win as Sellers and the Panthers had, Peyton Peterson and her team had more. Facing their first deficit all night, the Wolverines did not blink, in particular reserve guard Izzy Norton. Norton's second 3-pointer of the second half from the left wing with 4 minutes and 42 seconds left in the game tied it at 42-all. Panorama had a chance to retake the lead, but Time Betcher missed a pair of free throws, and Peyton Peterson responded with back-to-back inside scores that pushed Dyke New Hartford ahead 46-42. Nursing a 4-point lead, Dahl turned to a strategy he swore he'd never use. Peyton Peterson made a pair of free throws with 17 seconds left that made it 48-45. Dahl called a timeout and told his team to let some clock run, but foul with under 10 seconds left. The Wolverines, who held Panorama without a basket for the final 4 minutes and 56 seconds, fouled with 7.2 seconds left. Then, after a timeout, Dyke New Hartford fouled Mia Waddle with 3.2 seconds left. That foul sent Waddle to the line. She made the first, and after a timeout, intentionally missed the second. But Peterson grabbed her 14th rebound and hugged the ball like her life depended on it. Peyton Peterson, who became the first player in state history to be named captain of the all-tournament team four times, seven if you count her three in volleyball, said that final one belongs not only to her teammates and herself, but all those Wolverine players that came before her. This week was Dyke New Hartford's seventh consecutive state tournament. For 25 straight games, the Waverly Shellrock girls basketball team was perfect. However, when the Gohawks took the floor on Saturday for the Class 4A state championship, they did so matched up against an all-time defense. When it was said and done, the Clear Creek Amana Clippers won 43-25 over the Gohawks and left the state tournament with the new 4A record for team field goal percentage defense. The Clippers limited opposing teams to just 33 of 149 from the field, or 22.1%, in three games at the state tournament, breaking Marion's previous record of 26% set in 2017. Hearing of the Clippers' record-breaking defense neither surprised coach Greg Bodensteiner, nor did it take salt out of a fresh wound. Clear Creek Amana held Waverly Shellrock to just 4 of 24 in the first two quarters, including a 1 of 11 showing in the second half. Senior Brenna Bodensteiner led the Gohawks with 5 points in the first half, connecting on a triple and a pair of free throws in the second quarter to account for all of Waverly Shellrock's points in the period. As Waverly Shellrock's offense sputtered, Clear Creek Amana also struggled, falling short of its 46.1% season field goal percentage. However, the top-seeded Clippers got 9 first-quarter points from sophomore Avery Lauer and 7 points from senior Ava Locklear to build a 24-12 halftime advantage. Clear Creek Amana sped out to a 20-point lead with an 8-0 run to open the third quarter. Lauer hit a 3 and got a layup to go, while Bliss Beck converted on an old-fashioned 3-point play to give the Clippers a 32-12 advantage with 5 minutes and 22 seconds remaining in the quarter. Bodensteiner added 3 points at the free throw stripe, while Emma Thompson managed 1. After going more than 10 minutes without a field goal, Waverly Shellrock sophomore Brittany Bodensteiner got a shot to go at the third quarter buzzer to cut the lead to 36-18 with a quarter to play. A trio of Clippers scored in double figures as Lower scored 17 points while Locklear managed an 11-point 19-rebound double-double. Senior Bliss Beck managed 11 points and 8 rebounds. Brenna Bodensteiner led the Gohawks with 10 points. The Gohawks matched the Clippers in the fourth quarter as each team managed 7 points to seal Clear Creek Amana's first state title in school history. With the win, the Clippers improved to a 26-0 on the season. Caitlin Clark stood alone at the free throw line on Sunday and made the foul shots that put her atop the all-time NCAA Division I scoring chart. The flash and pizzazz of her game have made her the biggest name in all of college basketball, yet it was 2 free throws after a technical foul that pushed Clark past the late Pete Maravich's 50-year-old record in No. 6 Iowa's 93-83 win over No. 2 Ohio State. Clark entered the game in Iowa City, needing 18 points to pass Maravich's total of 3,667, amassed in just 83 games over 3 seasons at LSU, back in 1967 to 1970. She finished with 35 to run her total to 3,685 in 130 games. Maravich's mark fell 4 days after Clark broke Lynette Woodard's major college women's record when she scored 33 points against Minnesota on Wednesday. Best known for her long three-pointers, Clark was called on to go to the foul line after Cody McMahon was assessed a technical for giving her a little push during a dead ball with less than a second to go in the first half. Clark had no immediate reaction after the second shot went through, as if it hadn't sunk in yet. She said she knew the record had fallen only after it was announced. It didn't matter to her that she made history with two free throws rather than a half-court logo three-pointer. Woodard was among those at Carver Hawkeye Arena to help Clark celebrate Senior Day. Also on hand were basketball great Maya Moore, who was Clark's favorite player, and baseball Hall of Fame pitcher Nolan Ryan. Logitech's Tix, which researches prices on ticket resale platforms, reported an average sale price of $598 for a ticket to Sunday's game purchased since February 1st. Clark is all but assured of one or two more appearances at the arena in Iowa City. Iowa is projected to be a number 2 seed for the NCAA tournament, meaning it would be at home for the first two rounds. Pearl Moore of Francis Marion owns the overall women's record with 4,061 points from 1975 to 79 at the small college level in the AIAW. Moore had 170 points at Anderson Junior College before enrolling at Francis Marion. Clark is 376 points behind Moore, and she has 2 to 9 more games left in an Iowa uniform, depending on how far the Hawkeyes advance in the Big Ten and NCAA tournaments. The fall of Maravich's record is subject to scrutiny. Maravich's all-time scoring mark is one of the more remarkable in sports history. There was no shot clock or three-point line in his era. The three-point line was adopted in 1986. Maravich averaged 44.2 points per game. He scored more than 60 in a game 4 times, topping out at 69 against Alabama on February 7, 1970. LSU coach Kim Mulkey, who grew up in Louisiana and played at Louisiana Tech, said after her team's win over Kentucky on Sunday that comparing Maravich and Clark would be like comparing apples and oranges. What Caitlin's done has been amazing. She's a fantastic player, great for the women's game and basketball in general, Maravich's eldest son Jason told the Associated Press last week. And things are not all girls basketball. The Waterloo Warriors varsity hockey team took fourth at the 2024 Midwest High School Hockey League Championship Tournament over the weekend. The Warriors, seeded sixth, opened the tournament with a 1-0 win over third seed Omaha on Friday before falling to the second seeded Des Moines Oak Leafs 6-3 on Saturday and the top seeded Sioux City Metros 9-1 on Sunday. On Friday, it doesn't matter who the Waterloo Warriors match up against. After beating the top team in the Midwest High School Hockey League, the Sioux City Metros, last weekend, the Warriors know they stack up against anyone at the MHSHL Championship Tournament this weekend. The Warriors proved to be the better team in a 1-0 win over the Omaha Junior Lancers in a quarterfinal game on Friday. Waterloo came up empty on three power play opportunities in the first period. Despite the Warriors' power play advantage, Omaha managed to outshoot Waterloo 6-4 in the opening frame. Although the Warriors failed to capitalize on special teams chances, head coach Brian Cook said he was happy with the 0-0 tie after 17 minutes of action. Fortunes changed for Waterloo in the shot department in the second period as the Warriors held Omaha without a shot for the first 12 minutes of the period while getting 7 attempts on Omaha's cage. After killing off an Owen Dellinger penalty, during which Omaha managed to get five shots on Waterloo goaltender Shane Lochner, the Warriors resumed their dominant play, but remained without a goal as the clock ticked under 3 minutes remaining in the frame. According to Hess, the Warriors just needed to keep it straight up like they have all season. Waterloo finally broke through with 1 minute and 35 seconds to play in the second period as Hess, a Denver junior, tipped in the first goal of the game. Defenseman Jack Rickers cut off the puck after Omaha attempted to rim it around the boards and out of the zone. The Waterloo West junior put the puck on the net without hesitation, and Hess managed to redirect the shot between the legs of Omaha goaltender Eli Seimerd. Hess said he hadn't realized the shot found the back of the net until he saw his teammates celebrating around him. Hess's goal stood up as the game winner as Lochner stopped all six Lancers shots in the final period to secure the 18-goal shootout and the win. The Lindmar senior admitted to feeling some nerves prior to the opening faceoff, but settled into the net after the first two periods. Maddox Harn and Andrew Buschbaum led Waterloo with two goals apiece during the tournament. Dayton Neidert led the Warriors in scoring with four assists, including recording a playmaker against Des Moines with an assist on all three Waterloo goals in the loss. Neidert, a forward, and Harn, a defenseman, were both named to the 23-24 MHSHL All-Star team at their respective positions. The Warriors' junior varsity team took second place, falling to Omaha's JV team on Sunday, 4-3, after defeating Lincoln JV 5-1 on Friday and Sioux City JV 4-3 on Saturday. Cale Buchan, Carter Buchan, Aiden Loeb, and Sean Wetlaufer each scored two goals apiece to lead the Warriors' JV in goals during the tournament. Andy Schell manned the net for all three games, going 2-1 with a 2.33 goal against average and a .854 save percentage. And that finishes out today's sports. A longtime Grout volunteer, family members, and donate the time and money to a landscaping project. When Howard Craven sees something that needs to be done, he does it, and he often recruits family members to help. For several weeks last fall, Craven, his wife Roberta, and their twin grandsons Luke and Cole Ernest tackled the landscaping around the Sullivan Brothers Iowa Veterans Museum. The project was 100% the brainchild of Howard and his desire to help improve the overall appearance of the museum district, said Alan Sweeney, interim executive director and director of facilities and exhibits for the Grout Museum District. The Craven family spent many weeks and over 70 hours on the landscaping project at the Grout Museum Sullivan Brothers Iowa Veterans Museum, he said. The group started in late August and finished up in early December. The project included pulling out stumps, clearing vines, mulberry bushes, burrs, and weeds, pruning shrubs, and laying landscape fabric and rocks. The twins, along with their brother Kyle and cousin Carson Haas, 17, have helped with landscaping, painting, and repairs throughout the district and at the Cedar Valley Arboretum and Botanic Gardens, where Craven is also a longtime volunteer. It hasn't been all work and no play. The twins remember accompanying their grandparents to the Blue Dorn Science Imaginarium when they were children and later climbing on the tank in the Veterans Museum once it opened. Craven said he is happy with the result. It's a big improvement. Without the support of community members like the Craven family, the museum district would not be the community resource it is today, Sweeney said. Volunteers have been a part of the museum district since its inception in the 1950s and are a large part of the success that the district has had over the years. Howard has been a volunteer for the museum district for many years, assisting in many landscape projects as well as indoor and outdoor painting projects, he said. Craven has also been a member of the Friends of the Grout Historic Houses and Friends of the Snowden House for more than 20 years. He and Roberta regularly help with the group's fundraisers, including the annual Garden and Classic Homes tours. Roberta also volunteered with the district's museum school program. Craven, originally from Orient in southwest Iowa, taught industrial technology in the Waterloo Community Schools for 32 years. He used to help building houses with Habitat for Humanity and now volunteers at the organization's ReStore. Craven, now 81, hasn't slowed down much, but does rely on Roberta to drive him around as he suffers from macular degeneration. She says, "I'm happy to help." And that seems to run in the family. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Tuesday, March 5th, 2024. I'm your reader, Grace Barter. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.